And with that, we proceed to KSCO Presents The Dr. Future Show. Have a terrific Tuesday.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO Presents The Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome to Future Tuesday. Wonderful day today in the neighborhood. We're hoping to be a little more sunnier, faster, but it's starting to come out now. Yeah, if you're along the coast here, you're experiencing a little bit of that fogginess. But no need to worry. It's going away, if only temporarily. Meanwhile, we have a great show for you today. Mrs. Future is in the studio.
In the house.
Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. And we have an old friend and contributor to the show, Bruce Erickson, in the studio. Hi, Bruce. Say hi to the audience.
Hi. Welcome. Glad to be here.
Good. And Bruce will be on mostly for the second hour to talk about the latest in alternative healing technologies. He's been at the Tesla Tech Conference and a few other gatherings, has collected quite a bit of interesting information about electromagnetics and healing and related topics. So we'll be looking forward to Bruce's report. Also, Mrs. Future had a very interesting connection this week with a woman.
Sarah Melchizedek. Sarah Melchizedek, yes.
And guess what she wrote about?
She has written three books about the starseed transmission. And for those of you who really love to talk about how much light there is in the universe and how we can use it to expand our reality, she's got a lot of valuable information that I've been absorbing.
She'll be on from 2:30 to 3, a little bit of our woo science piece then.
Should be really Dr. Future is not quite sure that he believes in this stuff.
Well,
but
you know, he
likes the benefits of seeing me benefit from it.
I appreciate trans-channeling and such. I just don't do it myself, you know. It's not part of my way of understanding the universe, but it's okay. I have an open mind. I do believe the brain can be some kind of transceiver that picks up information from other dimensions. So, hey, let's see what she has to say.
Well, and she's not the only person. This week I have had so many really relevant communications. For instance, I was at a live stream from Joe Dispenza. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of people talking about what energy is doing on the planet right now and how important it is for us to work with our thoughts, our consciousness, our ability to program in the world that we want to live in and bring that into reality. So
what you think about is what you end up creating for yourself,
I think is the
fundamental.
Thoughts are leading matter. Matter is slowed down thoughts.
Be conscious of what you're thinking or judging or believing. And
that's right.
What see what happens if you change a little bit.
Is what you achieve.
So before we get into all our guests and belief systems and alternatives and stuff, let's look at some of the news, shall we?
Yes.
Dr. Future News. Right now, SpaceX Starhopper is about to be tested.
SpaceX Starhopper. Now, Starhopper is a rather new craft in the SpaceX lineup, right? It's still just barely out of the barn. It's being tested.
Yeah, SpaceX has started streaming. You've got to our links page, drfutureshow.com/links. You'll see a piece on the Starhopper and SpaceX. And just in a few minutes, in Boca Chica, Texas, they're going to be attempting a hop of the spacecraft. FAA has given it permission to fly as high as 492 feet above ground level, go sideways, and then land.
And if you just go to the picture on this link, it is amazing. It is science fiction. It looks like it's out of a comic book. The Starhopper is this humongous aircraft where, you know how the Tesla Dragons, they all have three launch rockets at the bottom? Well, the astronaut standing underneath the Starhopper is about the same height as one of the three rockets, and the rockets themselves are probably about 15 feet up in the air. And then that's just the tiniest little bit of the rocket. And the rocket itself is just humongous. It's the size of a, I don't know, what, a 10-story building or something?
Yes, yes, that at least. And it is a part of a next-generation heavy launcher previously known as BFR. Or the big Falcon rocket to help build the Mars colony. So this ship is the test of the technology for the Mars ship.
Yeah, and they call it Star Hopper because it's going to hop around on other planets.
Not stars. Our star. Yeah, Charlie was asking, why not Planet Oops, Hopper star. Then? Uh-huh. Why is he called Star Hopper? So I think it's because Elon thinks one step ahead. Mm-hmm. So then when we're going to other star systems, it'll be called Galaxy Hopper.
There you go. Think
one
big.
Step ahead, yeah.
We're just taking the first
Star
step.
Star Hopper is between planets.
We know
planets.
Where we're going.
Also, I believe he has plans for using the Star Hopper to hop between cities as well. So you'd be able to go between LA and London, for example, in an hour.
Mm-hmm. Right. Maybe the passengers of the stars.
Yeah. So they'll be testing that any minute now. We'll see if that we'll know sometime soon in the show if that actually has been successful test today.
Boy, when you look at the beauty of these rocket designs, you really feel like you're in the future. I do. I love seeing the rockets coming out of SpaceX.
Yes. And it's also interesting to note that there has been progress also in a field called quantum teleportation, which once fully realized could make any type of spaceship relatively obsolete.
Yeah. Well, now we're talking Star Trek tech, and we are definitely in the caveman era of Star Trek tech.
Where it's like the early days of quantum teleportation.
I'm glad we made a teeny-weeny breakthrough. What's it look like?
It's a mysterious phenomenon. It's not the same as teleportation like you see in science fiction. Instead, it's a transfer of information about the quantum state of a particle.
Oh, brother.
Okay, it's kind of much smaller.
What a headline.
But you've been able to create.
This is like, hey, the email's getting there. What do you mean it's information?
Yeah, well,
it's a breakthrough in teleportation, but it's only information?
Yes, but it's more complicated information. Until now, scientists had only been able to teleport quantum bits or qubits.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the simplest possible pieces of quantum information where a particle can be in two states at once.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're able to teleport a qutrit, Q-U-T-R-I-T.
Okay,
now that adds a whole extra dimension to it.
What is
it? Qubit. If a qubit is polarized in two ways at once, a qutrit is polarized in three directions, which is like a trinary system, vastly more complicated than a binary system. And so far, it's been a tremendous challenge to do it, and they have successfully done that. Sending a qutrit rather than a qubit is a vast increase in complexity because of the nature of the process.
So this is a headline about amazing math.
And being able to quantum teleport the information of a qutrit.
Oh, I see. Because you can find out more about the dimension where you are looking for your data. You're supposed to be a scientist. Now, this just sounds so weird.
Hey, we got to go to a break right now. Okay. Got to go. But let's just keep in mind qutrits rather than qubits. There's an article there that will go into more depth. It's hard to explain in 30 seconds, Mrs. Fuser.
Qutrits.
Yeah,
okay.
We can go into more detail.
Look
I've got
it
much
up.
More news I want to cover before I talk to our guests.
Okay, Dr. Future. We'll
All
be right back.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Dr. and Mrs. Future here to entertain and educate you on some of the latest and greatest stuff about future tech and future awareness.
Here it comes. Coming in fast.
Okay, first of all, a clarification from Richard down in Long Beach. He says regarding Elon's ship, it's actually called the Starship, and that the Star Hopper is a test configuration of it for testing
you.
The new engines.
Okay.
Okay, it's tiny compared to the actual ship.
It's humongous. It's already humongous, and the rest of the ship is even more humongous.
Yes.
Ginormous.
More bigger. Yeah, you need a big ship until we get the quantum teleportation, Qutrit technology down, which will take a while. It's kind of like fusion.
Right. Still in the drawing board.
Well, not totally. No, we do have quantum computers.
And they're using entanglement, and this is all...
And they're using qubits, and if they use Qutrits, it'll give them more capacity.
So the funny thing about all this is that the qubits and all of that stuff is in the realm of consciousness. It's energy. It's faster than light, but it's not in the realm of matter. It's in the realm of calculation.
Information. Well, information. The idea is that information precedes matter.
That's right. Right? And energy is bigger than...
Matter is created in some way by information.
E equals MC squared.
Yeah, in the beginning was the word, I think, even the Bible.
Mm-hmm. I'd be very leery of autonomous transportation until I had a good navigation system to where I'm going.
Absolutely. All right, so does that mean that we can use Qutrits, or we still have to wait until they're more real?
Well, no, I think that's a non sequitur, Mrs. Future.
Oh, okay. Sure is for me.
Yeah, what do you mean by that, Bruce?
Well, I'd like to know where I'm going. You know, I just experienced a Tesla, and once you put down the gas, you better know where you're going, okay?
Bruce recently tested a Tesla. You tried the autonomy mode? Did it put in that?
Well, actually, it was an interesting experience. I didn't try the full autonomy mode, but I did have the course correcting thing in a couple instances in L.A., and I found it amazing. A truck just weaved into my lane very suddenly, and the car corrected itself and
took you out of the dangerous way.
It's an amazing safety feature. How they engineer it, I don't know, but it's particular in LA traffic. You need it, okay? It's called the kamikaze driver's event there, yeah.
Yeah, I think you need special software to drive in LA.
Yeah, you need special courage to drive in LA.
Okay, a couple of things. One, we were out on a whale-watching expedition this weekend.
Yes, thank you, Valhalla. Once again, connecting with the dolphins and the whales.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Ruthie. Amazing experience. And one of the things that caught my attention was how we had to, a couple of times, veer off course and rescue, I guess you might say, balloons.
Oh, that's right. Mylar balloons floating in the ocean. That could, bad for the big fish.
Yes, not good for mammals and fish, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking that there's a tremendous amount of balloons that seem to end up in the bay. Now, it seemed like a good idea at the time that someone would come up with a biodegradable balloon. I'm just putting it out there. I think it would be a great idea.
So instead of indigestible mylar that is a toxin for the fish, we should be feeding them with some kind of balloon fish food.
Yes. Yes.
Great ideally, Dr. Future. That's right up your alley.
It could be food for the fish. Yeah, ideally.
Let's think about it more holistically.
You know, after I was thinking about that, I was researching for the show, and I came across this very interesting article from phys.org about a device that vanishes on command.
A device that vanishes on command.
It's a polymer. That polymer depolymerizes and disappears. And it's being developed by the military for delivering packages and sensors into hostile territory and then vaporizing immediately upon a military mission's completion. Now, that material has been made into a rigid winged glider and a nylon-like parachute fabric for airborne delivery across distances of 100 miles or more. So it could be used possibly in building materials and environmental sensors at some point in the future. Now, the idea here is that it's a kind of a biodegradable plastic that instead of degrading over a year, it degrades over a few days, and it begins degrading instantly when you push a button to trigger an internal mechanism or if the sun hits it. So biodegradable materials on demand.
So it won't be incorporated in beachwear.
Well, unless
only
it's
only on nudist beaches.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Disappearing polymers. Department of Defense. I think mycelial plastic might be another way to where to look for that. Cannabis plastics, something that is bio already and will degrade. So if you have any thoughts on that, let me know, because I'm collecting information on that. I think biodegradable balloons would be an excellent invention.
You know, it's an interesting topic, Alan and Son, because if you look around the world, the amount of ideas in biodegradable plastics have emerged all over the place.
Yeah.
Even a couple of young teenage girls in Africa discovered how to do it out of banana residues.
Really? Plastic?
And, yes. And so,
can it hold gas, though?
I didn't mean for a balloon, but I meant for other plastic products.
Yeah, for containers.
But it's just, it's mushroomed everywhere.
So
it's very encouraging that there's innovation coming about in many places.
We were just reading about a woman that we met who received what's called the Roosevelt Prize because, I can't think of her name right now, but remember we met her over at Tommy Lorsch's place. And
oh, yes. Yeah, she was recreating more valuable polymers and plastic molecules from trash,
plastic. She was involved in researching the chemistry of plastics and having such a high-resolution understanding of the molecules that any plastic could be recycled into any other. And she was very engaged at the industry level of trying to convince all kinds of different industries to start using plastics that would be whole cycle materials so that they wouldn't become trash.
She has a startup on that. We're going to bring her on the air and talk about that.
Yeah. You know what I don't understand about the United States? Sweden has done such a magnificent job at managing their trash and creating energy, and to the point they don't even have enough trash to absorb it all. And yet that technology just hasn't reached the United States, and we need it so badly. I wish there were a greater focus on it, because talk about an economic opportunity with the decrease in purchasing of recycled materials by the Far East from the United States. That technology is badly needed.
Well, I have to tell you, just this summer, I have noticed that the organic grocery stores have a lot more packages that are made of recyclable materials. I have not been buying things that are coming in unrecyclable plastic containers, and I have been buying things that are coming in some kind of recyclable plastic bag or recyclable paper bag. I feel the best about paper. It seems really clean and recyclable. Anyway, I think that now that the laws are changing and making it so that people cannot send their trash to the dump, they can't recycle the plastic anymore, the recycling centers are closing down, there's a huge shift going on, and we're just beginning to see it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're just beginning of that renaissance, too, of what's possible.
Mm-hmm. Right, reinventing how we do it.
Oh, in that department, pollution-free hydrogen has been generated, a green energy breakthrough.
Polluting before? Seems like hydrogen is the essence of non-pollution.
Well, yes, because extracting hydrogen from oil was possible before, but it released a lot of greenhouse gases. Now a new breakthrough is where you can extract hydrogen from oil without releasing greenhouse gases, that many see as a silver bullet for cleaner energy in the climate. Because unlike gas and diesel, hydrogen has no pollution when burned. It's already used by some cars. You might have heard the Mirai, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And it can also be burned in generators to make electricity.
Mm-hmm.
So until now, any kind of widespread rollout of hydrogen has been prohibited by the high cost of separating it from hydrocarbons or electrolysis, where you split hydrogen from oxygen with water. It takes a lot of energy to do that.
It's a pesky little molecule. Yeah.
Currently, most of it comes from natural gas, an extraction process which produces a lot of methane as a byproduct. Not good. So a group of Canadian engineers have come up with a method of getting hydrogen directly from the oil sands and oil fields while leaving the carbon dioxide and methane in the ground. So this was revealed just recently at the Goldschmidt Geochemistry Conference in Barcelona. And the technology has the potential to supply of all of Canada's electricity requirement for over 300 years without releasing any greenhouse gas effects.
Wow.
That's 35 million people or so. About the same as California.
That's great.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes, boy.
Yeah. So no emissions, and you could power our entire existing infrastructure.
All right. For the same price?
For the state or for the country. Well, the details, the devil's in the details in all this stuff.
Mm.
The first step is for the scientists
to figure out how
to do it, and then it's a matter of figuring out how to do it.
We're still disagreeing about
why. And they say they already figured out it is competitive to do it this way.
So soon it will be when?
Yes. So making hydrogen from hydrocarbons using oxygen. It's nothing new. It's been around for a while. It's just not releasing the CO2 to the atmosphere when you make it. Really exciting.
Very smart.
Yes. That's been our green energy development areas. And just really quickly, a couple things. There's a new CRISPR method for genetic editing.
So I knew you were going to squeeze that in the last 30
engineering,
seconds.
Biogenetic engineering has got another leap forward, which makes it more and more an interesting topic to discuss.
Oh, boy. Easier to splice genes. Sort of Dr. Future can't wait.
And yes, and I also wanted to weigh in on the Hawaii versus Spain on where we're going to build the 30-meter telescope. But that's a whole other conversation we should save for a separate segment, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to hear from Ben Fuchs, and with any luck after that, we're going
to try to bring in our channel.
Sarah Melchizedek, our
all
channel.
Right. Sarah from, she's from New Zealand.
She's and living in
Germany
New
before that.
Yes.
Right.
All right, folks, this is the Dr. Future Show. We will be right back.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. We're waiting to hear from our psychic trance channel beaming in from somewhere.
Yes.
Somewhere else on the planet.
We're not sure how to reach our channel. We're sending her a psychic message. And we set her up with the software and we made an appointment, but she's not here. And
so we're going to go on to a couple other things because I got a lot of stuff I want to share with you folks. One is that you've probably heard about that giant telescope that is being blocked on the Big Island in Hawaii, blocked by native Hawaiian opponents. There's a coalition that wants to stop it, and there's an even bigger coalition that wants to put it in place in Mauna Kea, the best place for a $1.4 billion instrument that will tell us more about the universe than we've ever known before.
The very top of the tallest volcano in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah. The backup site is a peak on the Spanish Canary Island of La Palma, which is a comparably similar location, but it's not quite as high. It's like 6,000 feet lower, and that makes a difference in terms of clarity of the sky. And there's also no significant opposition to putting the telescope on La Palma, like there is in Hawaii, where some native Hawaiians consider the mountain sacred and have blocked trucks from hauling construction equipment up to the summit for over a month now. But Hawaii has advantages, and the scientists say it is better because of its higher altitude, its cooler temperatures, it's got rare stargazing moments that will allow cutting-edge telescope views. Every so often, you just go up there and you have a magical night where the air is so super stable and you get images that you just couldn't get anyplace else. So, you know, I've thought about this quite a bit, and that here we are, we're putting up this expensive device that will allow us to really look more deeply into the universe than we've ever done before. The 30-meter telescope. And you'll be able to see distant planets near bright stars. You'll be able to capture infrared light that emanates from space objects like asteroids about to hit us. You'll be able to have more detail than the Hubble in terms of looking at the universe. So in a sense, from a scientific point of view, I think being able to see that far is a sacred act. And, you know, it has a sacredness to seeing what the universe actually is and what's unfolding there.
Yes, absolutely. So, a lot of the naming for things in the universe has been coming out in the Hawaiian language lately.
And I'm wondering if the Hawaiian natives opposing this are aware of this level of exploration of the universe is happening there, that this sacred place in Hawaii is where we learn more about the universe than anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's pretty interesting.
Well, it may just be that it's the last vestige of resistance. The ancient world does not want to become the modern world of the future. And it comes down to people feeling like they're being respected You want the culture to know that this is part of their heritage as well. It's not a fight. Let's stop fighting with ourselves. We're all the Blue Earth planet, and Earth as a planet wants to expand into the known and unknown universe of the future. So we do have a phone call from Sarah.
All right.
You're ready.
Sarah, are you there?
Hello, Sarah.
I am here.
Thanks for calling. So glad to hear from you. Sorry that link didn't work out, but here you are. So great.
Yeah, I am.
All right. Well, fantastic. Well, let me just tell people that the amazing Sarah Melchizedek is an author of several new books, both published and upcoming. The one that I've been reading is called Starseed Awakening, which is the first in the series of three. And I just adore books like this, where it is a dialogue with beings who are in other dimensions and who are teaching us about how to expand our awareness so that we as human beings can participate in those other dimensions. Sarah, would you like to maybe introduce yourself and we can give people a little bit of this information?
Sure. Well, so I'm Sarah, and I am apparently the High Priestess of the Melchizedek Light Lineage.
So I like the way you say apparently, because you're having a little trouble even believing all of these things that are being downloaded to you into your consciousness, right?
Exactly, because I'm human and I have senses, so I can feel when something feels right. But to get such high titles of universal structures is still something we're not used to as humans.
Mm-hmm.
But it is my light lineage, they say, which I understand. I'm a light being. I can bring in light to our world. And I have a blood lineage, which is my parents, and that's we all can relate to that. So if we just imagine that we have that in the universe, we have light lineage, then we understand why we feel sometimes connected to people who we haven't met yet, or like meaning just meeting.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that mysterious feeling that you have an old friend the first time you meet someone, that kind of feeling.
Familiarity.
Right?
That
yes.
Kinship.
Yes.
Okay, and so now this first book that you gave to me is a conversation between you and a dear friend of yours who had recently passed away and who was returning to co-author this book with you, and in the process to open you up to being able to better understand how these light frequencies work and how human beings can participate with them, right?
That's correct, yeah. I've been, as writing and receiving and channeling this book and this dialogue, I've been going myself through a process of vast changes to belief of who I am and who I am not. And I believe I received this book and the other two which are coming out this year because we're all going through this process.
Sarah, were you a spiritual person before you started channeling this information?
I've never went to church, if you wanted, like saying it like that. But my mom said, since I was little, I always spoke about God, and I used to refer to the terms as, "Well, I know God." So I always was clear, and I was strong, and in earlier times, maybe more opinionated of what I feel I understand. So now I'm more compassionate and calm as I grow into this.
Mm-hmm.
Did it happen suddenly, the channeling? How did it begin?
The channeling happened, yeah, because my journey is that I had an awakening while I was driving the car in a busy city, and I saw an angel appearing on my bonnet, which didn't seem to bother me, but I could communicate with it, and it taught me where to go. The next day when I had that realization, I was a bit freaked out because I could see more things, but I had great spiritual friends at that time already, and they helped me to tune, to turn on this channel for the help for people. So I communicated with people's angels and helped them to heal certain things, but also to turn it off so that I'm having it on standby, so that if there's something important to be said, then it can come through. And if not, I can be very grounded and just with the realms I see with my physical eyes or I hear.
Mm-hmm. What was most surprising about what you were being told? What was the hardest for you to accept?
The hardest to accept was when I first saw the angels, and I didn't know what this is all about. Why would I need to see angels? What is this about? And this was in 2002. And
it's like, are you dying or something?
No, it's not at all.
No, I know. That would be the fear. That's all.
Yeah, no, there was no fear.
That's good.
I must be attuned that this was coming for my life. I always think like that. But it was like, what is this good for? And they said to me, the planet is going to go through a massive shift and change, and people are needing help. And there is apparently thousands of angelic beings who are there to help if we call them in.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how do we call them? It sounds like you weren't busy calling them. It sounds like one of them said, hey, we're here by appointment because you're you.
Yes.
Well, do you...
Yes.
Did they tell you how they worked and how it all is supposed to unfold?
No, I'm held always in the unknown. I'm not at all. But I get high divine orders, I call it. And that's the reason why I'm this time in California. I was supposed to go to Peru, but that was cancelled by spirit. Sorry, I lost your question. What are we referring to?
Well, actually, what's most important, I think, is that you mentioned that you have a message for us in California, especially, and others as well. And I'd like to give you an opportunity to tell us what your message is for us in particular right now.
Yeah. So I remember just your question. You say how to call in the angels.
Yes, that was Sun's question.
So it's like we have to be in an open space. Say we feel stuck in our life, which happens a lot as things are changes.
Yeah.
And so we can sit quietly in a meditative state and just ask for help, and also specifically angelic help, because that's what this realm is there. This is one multidimensional realm, and this help can help push along like the right person to meet next.
Hmm.
Does it make sense?
Does everyone have angelic help?
Yes. Yes. We all have it. If we feel it, that's up to how sensitive we are, but we can call in more. That was one of the first messages of the angels. There are so many more, so you can be specific. Like, I would like to have that lightness of the angelics. That's very light, so that things can easy flow to help me with my next task. And so we can have it for anything we'd like to do.
So ask for what you really want to see happen here.
Yes, but the important thing, and that was the message which is also very important at this time, is that we connect to our heart when we ask for these things, so that we are in our heart, that we are in our true feelings, that we are in our true desire. So if we come from a more mental space of I'd like to achieve that, that might not work.
More of an authentic self.
Yes.
Yes, I think one of the phrases you like to use was the coherence of the heart, and we have to go to a little break right now, but why don't we talk about that when we come back, okay?
Okay, wonderful.
All right. This is our guest, Sarah Melchizedek. We're talking about light and heart coherence and all of the assistance we have to get through the crazy times ahead and come out better. Okay, Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back to the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show. I have a question for you, Sarah.
Yes.
Do you consider the angels and your higher self to be different or the same thing?
They are a specific part of one and the same thing. But these are fractal aspects of ourselves, just like you are an aspect of myself.
Yes.
But we are very unique in our expression, and we have different service to give to the whole.
Individuality and yet connected.
Exactly. That's how I experience it.
Mm-hmm. Now, in any dualistic model where we have good and bad, plus and minus, we have all the elements there. Does that mean if you see it as angelic, does there have to be a demonic involved, or can that be dropped? as a...
Does it have to be in duality? No, I don't think it has to be, because there is duality where we could say there is a good and a bad.
Yeah.
There's a good and a bad angel, which is teaching us separation. And mm-hmm. now we're in a cycle, in this ascension process we are all in on the planet, where we rediscover the connection. And in this connection, to me, there is only connection, and there is a helpful service, a supportive flow. So we could say that as good, but it actually is a different level of understanding ourselves. We are lifting. We are accelerating.
Yeah. It seems to me like the other level of understanding would be we are creating the two sides of the equation, where we see both as a creation of ours.
So I'd like to share something that, if you don't have a question then,
yeah,
which
ahead.
I thought was a very beautiful expression in the book. And it was a description of the fact that the Earth is a mother planet who is a place in the universe for birthing things that are new. And so the transformation of any person or consciousness that is born here is that they have an opportunity to be part of a co-creation. And our bodies belong to the Earth. So when we're being born into our bodies on the Earth, it's because we are part of an opportunity to create something new.
Yeah, that's good explanation. Yeah, that brings me to the book called Starseed Awakening. It is the consciousness that our soul has a seed somewhere else. And it's like you say, we come to the planet to participate. But this is a much bigger picture which we're playing out, because the future is that our DNA right now is from other star systems like Pleiades or Arcturus or Sirius. But in the future, we will star seed from this planet. So there will be new planets in the future, and we will send love, as a simple explanation, to the other planets and star seed from here. So we are part of creating a new consciousness right now. This is a very vast and far-ahead picture, but we are all part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And in our soul, we actually have that understanding.
Mm-hmm. That in the soul, this has already happened in a way, eh?
It is already happening, yeah. And the younger generation who will have much more coherence, that heart coherence of being in love / being peaceful inside their heart. Mm. That is the key of how we're going to evolve to a peaceful nation.
So the heart is the key.
Oh, the heart is the key.
Yeah, one of the profound things that you said when we met that really struck me is how different the understanding is of people from previous generations versus future generations, in that previous generations really understand this idea of collaboration, but the new beings that are formed really understand this idea of creation. And so they come with their blueprint intact, and they know what they're here to create because they're just in sync with their soul being. And they're not really on such a learning curve. They're not just being informed by what already exists to all do the same thing. They're all here to invent new things.
That's the little ones. That's the children who were born since 2012. They will come to that consciousness probably around 2030, but that they're going to create on this planet, which will be very amazing. Means new flowers, new species, new trees, new animals. Maybe even our look of the human body might change.
Mm-hmm. And we talk a lot on this show about... One of our regulars is, say, Bruce Damer, and one of the ideas that he champions is how the Earth is very involved in making sure that we duplicate ourselves. Like all life, we want to have an archetype that can go beyond the planet and go into the rest of the universe, and that's part of what our consciousness is gearing up for.
Okay, yeah.
I had a question for you. What happens when we all get our hearts aligned? Will we experiencing something like maybe the heartbeat of the species or something like that, or a pulse? I mean, what happens when we're in alignment?
That sounds very beautiful. That's a beautiful idea. It reminds me that I once were lying on the earth in a very sacred place in New Zealand where I'm living, and I could hear the heartbeat of the earth. That was very touching. It only happened to me once. So that will be a nice thing that we could maybe feel each other's pulse. I'm not sure if that's going to happen. I don't have that information. I don't hold that. But what it is when we are in this heart coherence is that our light bodies are starting to waken up. And with the light bodies, we are sensing so much more than we are sensing in the moment. So therefore, we are sensing each other stronger and we are coming into a harmonic pattern with each other. And it is a little bit like a dance of us then. That's what I feel.
A dance, huh? Yeah, you feel all the chakras working. Beautiful. Do you see this happening in certain places of the world first? Or is it going to happen all over as this dance?
What I've been seeing is, what I've been shown, and what I feel is already happening, is that people are starting to come together, and there's more and more young people coming, but also people in their 30s and their 40s coming together at festivals at the moment.
Yes, the festivals.
Music festivals. And when they are together for at least 3 days, sometimes a week, there is this amazing opening that you start to feel you live as family, like you live as a tribe.
Yes.
These are the experiences people are now having. As we have those experiences, we become drawn to that because it feels, we feel so whole in a big group like that. And what I've been told is there are specific places on the planet which will be made obvious to us, and we will move there. Say one is the south of France. They always talk about that. And people will move there and live in new communities, and but with the same feeling.
That, feelings, feelings where you...
We want to co-create that.
Co-create,
you know? We don't want to live separate anymore.
Right, and communities where you feel loved.
Yes, where we have unconditional love as a base. That is just the base to then communicate of who we are in our understanding. As we awaken to our star consciousness, we will have specific, unique imprints coming out and ideas of how we can build future cities, how we want to live together. There, we will recognize each other on a star level, and we will listen to each other from the heart. We won't be against each other. We will work all together.
Oh, that reminds me of a little quote I got from Deepak Chopra, who said, remember that everyone you see is a reflection. If I see you, it's a reflection of me, and I have to stop fighting with my reflection.
Okay, so what are you seeing in me?
What am I seeing in you? What I'm seeing in you is a visionary who is sharing the opportunity for people to guide themselves to be able to receive this new light and be part of it. And if it's part of their future, they will know and recognize. And what we're doing is helping co-activate, because people are looking for opportunities to do that.
Yeah, I consider you a cosmic information agent, giving us information that we need to create a better reality.
So let's give everybody your website and the book, right? They can buy the book.
They can buy the book on my website, which is Amazing Sarah M. So Sarah, just S-A-R-A, which apparently means love and light, Sarah. And M is for Melchizedek. So AmazingSarahM.com. That's where my book goes out. And I want to say about the book, when you read the book, it's written in poem form, and it does rewire your brain. It helps your brain to come into a balance, and then it comes into your heart. So you will, a lot of people feel love when they read the book, and there's massive concepts within this book.
Thank you, Sarah M.
Thank you. Yes,
AmazingSarahM.com for the Starseed Awakening. This is the Dr. Future Show on KSCO Santa Cruz, and we'll be back for the second hour after this.